Greetings and welcome everyone to today's webinar, Prep Me Please, Understanding PrEP's Role in Women's Health and Safer Conception. I am Daison Dixon-Jallo, founder and president of Sister Love Incorporated and also the convener of the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. I first just want to start out by thanking our partners who have helped us do the outreach and also the planning for today's call. Of course, there's Sister Love Incorporated. We have AVAC, we have HIV Prevention Justice Alliance, we have the Clinician Consultation Center, and the Bay Area Perinatal AIDS Center, BAPAC. And so I want to welcome all of you to today's call. I'm really excited about the conversation that we're going to have over the next, well, now it's 85 minutes or 83 minutes. And a couple of things. I also wanted to thank my co-coordinators of the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. We have Anna Forbes and Manju Chitani with us today. And I'm going to give a quick intro of our speakers. The way the call is going to go today is we're going to hear from our speakers. Then we're going to address, many of you have sent in really good pre-submitted questions with your registration. So we're going to go through some of those before we open up the lines to have a robust conversation for about 25 to 30 minutes at the end of the presentation. I also want to address a couple of things. We hope that you are engaging your social media today. We are using the hashtag PrEP, that's capital P, little r, capital E, capital P, the number 4 women, hashtag PrEP for women. And we encourage you to also use your own handles and hashtags to enhance the conversation. I also wanted to address, and we'll do it again during the course of the conversation, we did get a few really powerful and important questions regarding transgender women, of which we are most respectfully and happily inclusive in our work around U.S. Women in PrEP. Today's conversation is specifically about PrEP in the consideration of pregnancy and conception. So where that is relevant to transgender women, this conversation can include those questions and comments. But I will also let you know that coming up in November, we will be having our second annual conversation on perceptions of risk in women. We'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So first, I wanted to introduce you to our speakers today, and then just give you a little bit of background on the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group, of which two of our speakers are members. You're going to hear from Shannon Weber, an MSW. She's the director of the University of California at San Francisco's National Perinatal HIV Hotline, which is a free 24-hour, 7-day-a-week expert consultation service. She also coordinates the Bay Area Perinatal AIDS Center at San Francisco General Hospital, a program providing preconception and prenatal care to HIV-affected individuals. Shannon has also launched the Positive Reproductive Outcomes for HIV-positive Men, also called PRO-MEN Initiative, which is a collaboration between BAPAC and San Francisco General Hospital's Ward 86, which is the HIV clinic, where they're integrating men's reproductive and sexual health care into primary settings. We're also going to hear from Caroline Watson, who was a patient at the Bay Area Perinatal AIDS Center, BAPAC, where she had a baby with her husband. And I am reading Caroline's bio to you. So she is outing herself and her own family. This is not our doing. So she had an HIV-negative baby with her HIV-positive husband, and she's now an outreach worker, a volunteer for BAPAC. She currently is in school to become a social worker, and she is also a member of the Centers for Disease Control's Expert Panel on Reproductive Health and Preconception Care. Our third speaker today is Erica Aaron, no stranger to this webinar or to the net or to the working group. Erica is a nurse practitioner and an assistant professor at Drexel University College of Medicine in Philadelphia. She specializes in primary care of women with HIV, reproductive health, and pregnancy. Erica is a member of the U.S. Perinatal HIV Guidelines Working Group, the Public Health Service Task Force, and she's also a faculty member of the PenaMed Atlantic AIDS Education and Training Center. Next slide, please. So just to give you a brief background on who's presenting today's webinar, we are the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. We are a national community representing women's voices. In addition to our purpose as that representation, we are engaged and interested in inquiry, advocacy, and accountability around PrEP research and implementation. Ensuring women's safety, efficacy, and accessibility in PrEP research and rollout is a key focus for us, as well as being involved in the education and the engagement of community in the PrEP discourse and in information dissemination. We are set to mobilize a diversity of women's HIV and health advocates, researchers, industry folk, and policymakers in PrEP as well as other biomedical prevention options for women. Next slide, please. So throughout the year, the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group engages a lot of different activities. What we have coming up next and what's ongoing, of course, is we have open line and ongoing communication as well as information sharing with federal and industry partners. We also host, just as this one, a series of webinars on U.S. Women in PrEP and other biomedical prevention options. Typically, our webinars have focused on what we call PrEPception, or prepping consideration for conception. We also address the questions and the issues around what does risk mean and who are women that we may consider at risk and most likely to be interested in PrEP. And, of course, we do our annual updates on where the PrEP science is. And that, of course, will expand, we would expect, going into the future as more biomedical prevention options come online that are relevant and available to women. The working group hosts face-to-face meetings as funding allows, particularly, and we are hosting our next face-to-face meeting in Seattle in conjunction with the Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, also known as CROI, which will be taking place in February 2015. We also do a lot of national and international engagement at national conferences and meetings, some of those that are listed there on your slide, the U.S. Conference on AIDS, CROI, the International AIDS Conferences, the NIH networks, including the HIV Prevention Trials Network, Microbicides Trials Network, IPAC, as well as Research for Prevention, which is coming up for the first time this fall in Cape Town. And, of course, we're creating web portals and other online resources so that you will have access to articles, workshops, satellites, and different oral and poster presentations that we give in the community as well as at some of those other events that have just been mentioned. So next slide, please. If you want to get involved, we welcome you, of course, to our next webinar. We want you to stay tuned because Risky Women, Disrupting Simple Notions of Women's HIV Risk will be coming up in November. You are welcome to join the working group. If you are interested in becoming a member of the working group, please email our coordinator, Anna Forbes, at earthlink.net. And, of course, you can follow our work and resources online currently at the www.prepwatch.org/USwomen, and you have our hashtag there. So that's it for me. I would love now to turn it over to Shannon Weber.
Thank you, Dazon. I want to thank you and Anna for organizing this and to ABAC and the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group for hosting this important conversation. And I want to say welcome to the actually hundreds of people who have joined us today for this conversation. It was in 2010 that I first participated in a public conversation about the possibility of women using PrEP as an option for safer conception. And this was during a conversation hosted by the National Perinatal HIV Hotline at CROI. And 26 people were in attendance. When we wrote up that discussion, there was lots of disclaimers, as you might imagine, associated with that write-up. And you fast forward to where we are today, it's terribly exciting to have so many people interested in this conversation. As Dazon mentioned, this is a follow-up webinar to a presentation Erica and I did a year ago. And in this presentation, we covered the basics of the rationale for safer conception, why reproductive health for both women and men, and the data around women in PrEP. So we're starting this webinar today with the presumption that you know that information, although many people don't, and you can certainly access the information via the ASAP website or reach out to us individually. Very happy to help folks with that. But we're starting this webinar with that as the base, that we're all in agreement around that, and really looking at all that has happened in the last year related to this topic. So there's not actually much known about the desires of HIV negative women with HIV positive male partners related to conception and what options that they would like to try. But we have, and I'm sharing then some unpublished data that we have from an ongoing survey. There's a link at the bottom, and I'm hoping that we close this out later this month, but would still love to have a few more women participate. But this unpublished data that looks at women's desires for options and their willingness to take risk related to conception. It's important to note that this started in January 2010, which was 2.5 years before the FDA approval of Truvada for PrEP, and about 40% of these surveys were completed prior to July 2012. But in this 4-year period of time, about 93 women have completed the survey. 90% of them want to have a child with their positive male partner. 25% have tried to get pregnant. 67% have had vaginal sex without a condom. You'll see that there's a range of ways and times in which women use condoms, as we might suspect. 42% of the women who completed the survey have reached out to a provider to talk about ways that they can get pregnant with their partner. And you see they've talked with a variety of types of providers, from primary care to an HIV specialist to an OBGYN or a fertility specialist. And then when we ask women about what methods they would be willing to use to prevent HIV transmission and have a baby, women again selected a variety of options, which goes to show that a range of options should be made available and that this is an ongoing conversation that couples have in choosing what works best for them. But as it relates to this conversation, I want to point out that 53% of the women said they were willing to use PrEP. So in the last year, what is new for women in the U.S.? So in March of this year, San Francisco clinicians published our early experiences implementing PrEP in San Francisco, and the BAPAC experience, which is women, was included in this publication. So this is the first publication we have including U.S. non-trans women and PrEP uptake. And then in March of this year, the DHHS, perinatal HIV guidelines, were updated. That included a broader and more inclusive look at using PrEP in the process of conception. In April of this year, there was a front page article that published in the Washington Post, and this article profiled a couple named the Hartmans. They have a 4-year-old daughter now, and Dan Hartman is HIV positive. Susan Hartman and her child remain HIV negative, and this couple opted to not use PrEP. Although they considered it, there was not enough data for them at the time when they were choosing to have a child. But this article goes into great detail about the range of options that are available for couples and talks about PrEP. Caroline, who will be on in a little bit, is also quoted in the article. Because of this article, there was an ongoing or a new conversation that started, particularly online and in social media, which you can follow with the hashtag #HIVLoveWins. Really bringing couples and who either have children or want to have children together and helping folks to understand what the options are and what the research says. In April, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists published their committee opinion about PrEP. And ACOG is the membership organization for U.S. obstetricians and gynecologists, and it's a very well-respected organization among providers who do well women and obstetric care. So obstetrician gynecologists and midwives really look to respect or really look respectfully at committee opinions and reports published by ACOG. And in ACOG's committee opinion about PrEP, they began to define what women might benefit from PrEP. They specifically said that women in a serodifferent relationship, and then they also included sexually active women within a high HIV prevalence area or social network and one of the following. And began, I think, is a really great list of opening up this conversation about when and how women might be offered PrEP. In the ACOG committee opinion, they also included a statement about Truvada having a safe, reassuring safety profile during pregnancy, and also made a point about the importance of a woman who's breastfeeding remaining HIV negative. So also bringing up that we might want to include PrEP in that conversation for HIV-negative women who are breastfeeding. A few weeks after ACOG committee opinion was published, the CDC published their clinical practice guideline and provider supplement, which is incredibly well-written and also easy to read. Erica is going to take this apart in great detail in her presentation and help us to understand how this applies to PrEP implementation and uptake. But I want to make one point about something that came out of this publication that was really new for us in understanding how PrEP might work for women. So in this document that the CDC spelled out the amount of time someone would need to be on PrEP in order for the PrEP to have reached protective levels. So we learned for rectal exposure, you would need to be on PrEP for 7 days, and for vaginal exposure for 20 days. And really, prior to this time, there was lots of discussion about how long would a woman take PrEP before she tried to conceive, or in a setting where she didn't want to conceive, in which she would reach protective levels. The CDC actually says in their guidelines that for women, they should be on PrEP for 30 days prior to exposure. In July, the book Positively Negative was published. It's an e-book available on Kindle, and it profiles the Hartmans, who were also the couple in the Washington Post article, as well as Poppy Morgan, who's the woman who joined us last year on this very webinar. The Hartmans, as I mentioned, opted to use timed intercourse without PrEP, and the Morgans, as you might remember, opted to use timed intercourse with PrEP. So this book helped to put a face, so to speak, and give us like an intimate look into couples' lives about their struggles and the decisions they made about taking risk. The science is also spot on in this book, so it was really helpful in being able to talk with folks about how they can interpret the data for their own lives. This book helped to contribute to this online conversation with the hashtag HIVLoveWins as well. In July, the Partners PrEP study team published an article in JAMA that included the data from women who were receiving PrEP as part of the Partners PrEP study. Now, you might remember that in that study, women were not to get pregnant, but of course, many women did. And so before they were taken off PrEP for the 2 or 3 months in which they were on PrEP, the Partners PrEP study team had this great data, and they published it. And in the analysis, they concluded that the differences in pregnancy incidence, birth outcomes, and infant growth were not statistically different for women who were receiving either form of PrEP compared with the placebo. In March of this year, Nellie Mugo received IRB approval to include pregnant women in the ongoing Partners PrEP study. So in another year or so, we can expect to see some more data from this group. In July, Governor Cuomo issued a proclamation basically saying that they can end the AIDS epidemic in New York with a three-pronged approach, and he included PrEP as one of those prongs. This was followed up by a Dear Colleague letter from the New York Department of Health sent to all clinicians in New York asking for their support in widespread PrEP implementation. And they included in this women in two ways in this letter. One, they included HIV-negative partners in a serodiscordant relationship. And then they also included the, quote, high-risk heterosexual women, which were not specifically defined. And Terry Wilder, who is in New York, has taken it upon herself to make sure that women are included in the conversation. And so, to my knowledge, this will be the first PrEP rally specifically for women upcoming in a few weeks. I love that they're including women in all diversity, gender identity, and sexual expression in this event. And Poppy, the woman who joined us last year on the webinar, will be joining them by phone, along with two other New York-based women sharing their experience using PrEP. At the Thomas Street Clinic, which is a public health clinic in Houston, Texas, they launched a PrEP clinic. All individuals who are tested for HIV at Thomas Street Clinic are referred to the PrEP clinic. All women referred to the PrEP clinic are offered a visit with an obstetrician-gynecologist for either contraception or safer conception counseling. All of these services are available in one building, and half of those prescribed PrEP have been women. Just last month, in August, the PrEPception study launched, and this is the first U.S.-based study looking at continuous, or and really the first study looking at continuous dosing PrEP for conception. It's an acceptability and feasibility study that's being led by Meg Sullivan at Boston University. Erica, who's speaking later, is another PI, and Jean Anderson at Johns Hopkins. There's more information on that flyer on the right, and we look forward to, in a year or so from now, learning about the data that's collected through this study. And just last week here in San Francisco, there was a PrEP rally and hearing about PrEP. Supervisor David Campos has put forth a proposal that PrEP be covered for all in San Francisco, regardless of their ability to pay, and including some resources to educate providers. And he involved women both in the planning and the rollout of this proposal. You also were probably aware from the media that Supervisor Scott Weiner came out about his own PrEP use right around the time of the hearing, and he also included women in his Huffington Post piece. So with all that's happened in the last year for women, I wanted to give three vignettes about women who've used PrEP and then talk about what this might mean, what this last year might mean for us. So the first case is Maria. She was referred to BayPAC by our San Francisco City Clinic when she was contacted for partner services because of her partner being positive for syphilis. Her partner was also identified as HIV positive. The couple had not been using birth control, and they had talked about getting pregnant. At BayPAC, Maria initiated PrEP and was seen frequently in the beginning for a variety of complaints. In those early visits, she then discloses to her BayPAC provider that there's violence and control in her relationship. She also says that she does not actually want to become pregnant, and she says that PrEP is the one thing she feels like she has control over in her life. She then initiates contraception and continues to use PrEP. Her partner begins care, but he continues to be viremic. The second is a woman named Carolina. She's a 33-year-old Spanish-speaking woman. She just shared her story via a voice recording that Jim Pickett is going to publish soon on My PrEP Experience, and it's in Spanish. It's been transcribed and translated by Pedro Goycochea. In her story, she tells about being with her HIV-positive husband. They want to have a baby. They're consistent condom users, and they ask at their community clinic about having a baby, and they're repeatedly told that it's impossible to get pregnant unless they use sperm washing and in vitro fertilization or intrauterine insemination. This is also called assisted reproductive technologies. For this couple, those services are cost prohibitive. So the couple is referred to BayPAC for a preconception visit. And the BayPAC team initially focuses with the couple on the husband's detectable viral load and getting him undetectable. At that point, Carolina starts PrEP. They have timed intercourse, and they have a baby. And finally, Alexa is a 35-year-old woman. She's been married for 8 years to an HIV-positive man, and they want to have a baby. He's been undetectable for 5 years. Alexa's very well-read, calls me often, having read the latest article that's published. She's spoken with all the fertility clinics. But because of where they live and the associated costs, using assisted reproductive technologies is not feasible for them. She goes to her local perinatal HIV specialist who will not offer PrEP to her and refers her to an REI, is a reproductive endocrinologist, so a fertility specialist. And that fertility specialist does not actually work with affected couples. She then goes to her obstetrician gynecologist and then her family practice doctor asking for PrEP, and both decline to prescribe it for her. She then seeks services from the clinic in town that's offering PrEP to gay men. And with consultation from the perinatal HIV hotline, this ID provider prescribes her PrEP. For 2 months, they try timed intercourse and do not get pregnant, which is not unusual. But with a job change and new insurance, his monthly copay is now $1,600 and hers is $900. The couple continues to use condoms and she has stopped PrEP. So when I look back at this last year, I see this tremendous momentum for women around PrEP. There is now strong clinical guidelines from several well-respected agencies. We see this growing political will to end HIV transmission, and we see women specifically included in that process and in that rollout. We see increasing patient desire for PrEP use, particularly as it relates to conception. And along with some of this media coverage, we see growing public acceptance for this. But I think that the three vignettes also show we have some tremendous opportunity in front of us. When there's an opportunity to educate providers both about PrEP in general and specifically about PrEP for women, there's some access issues related to medication and medical care. And I think some of these women's stories really show the siloed approach to HIV prevention, contraception, and family planning that can really only be experienced, that disconnect can really only be experienced through the eyes of the woman. Beautifully, there's this larger preconception care movement happening nationally. This is totally unrelated to HIV, but this growing data showing the value of preconception care, work being done to include men in the preconception care movement that does not yet include PrEP or HIV or safer conception. There's also this broader movement to define more broadly what a family planning visit might include, yet another opportunity for PrEP and safer conception to be included. I think there's also tremendous opportunity for support women in sharing their stories. Women face stigma both related to PrEP use as well as stigma related to their reproductive decision-making. And so while we've seen some support for women who've told their stories, if you have the stomach for it and read some of the comments, you can see that there is a lot of room for us to grow in this area. And I think it's an opportunity for us as a community to support women and their partners who do come forward sharing their stories. One of the reasons that it's so difficult for women to share their stories is they're not just telling their own story, they're then outing their partner's status and story and sometimes their extended family network as it relates to having a baby. So there's a variety of relationships that are involved, all of which is the more reason for us to provide tremendous respect. So really, to wrap it up, our goal is that integrated reproductive and sexual health care. Every HIV-exposed pregnancy will be well-planned and well-timed. There will be no HIV transmissions to infants or to uninfected partners, and the health of all HIV-affected parents and infants will be optimized. For me, I conceive that PrEP is really a paradigm shift for us. So PrEP is a woman-controlled HIV prevention method that does not require disclosure to partners, though it certainly can be disclosed, right? It's a whole new opportunity. It's a game changer in the way in which we can talk about women. And it's been tremendously hard work that each of you are doing to build out these infrastructures and connections so that women can access PrEP. And I want us to be mindful that we're really building out infrastructure and systems that support women accessing an expanded prevention portfolio, meaning that as more options become available, including a dual prevention method, that women will be able to have access to them. And we have a ways to go in terms of threading together those services for women. When I hear folks talk about this expanded HIV prevention toolkit, and if I ask, it's not always well defined, but if we ask about it, it rarely includes pregnancy testing or pregnancy planning. And so I want to propose that we look at what a prevention or wellness portfolio for women might look like. This would be an array of services that adapt to her, related to where she is in her life and what her needs are. And based on what we know about women and their vulnerability to either acquiring HIV or to unplanned pregnancy, this prevention or wellness portfolio would include STI and HIV prevention. It would include regular pregnancy testing. It would include support for pregnancy planning or contraception. It would include cultural competence around domestic violence and emotional abuse and understanding of how prior trauma impacts vulnerability to HIV acquisition, as well as support for depression, alcohol, or drug use, understanding how being stably housed impacts a woman's reproductive and sexual health decision-making, and also support around adherence and disclosure. It's really a terribly exciting time that we're at, where we have the science to end sexual HIV transmission, and so what remains is implementation and scale-up of effective interventions. The beautiful thing is that it means we all can make a difference. It can mean that we can make a difference in the way we shape our language, talking about women, the way we work to thread those services together, and the way in which we support access. So I would like to now introduce Caroline to talk about her story with BayPAC and shed a little bit of light about how this impacts one woman's life. As Zazon said at the beginning, Caroline was a patient at BayPAC, where she had an HIV-negative baby with her positive husband in 2013. They shared their pregnancy story in a front-page article in the San Francisco Chronicle, and she's now a volunteer outreach worker for BayPAC. She's a member of the CDC's expert panel on reproductive health and preconception care. So thank you, Caroline, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, why don't you explain how is it that you came into care with BayPAC?
Well, I was pregnant, and I went to my first prenatal visit at SFGSU's 5M, and I had a midwife, and she was asking me questions like, do you use drugs, do you drink, do you have sex with somebody who's HIV positive? I was like, well, I don't drink or do drugs, but I do have sex with somebody who's HIV positive, that's the baby's father. And she just got this weird look on her face, like, she was scared. And she's like, well, I don't know if I can treat you. There's this clinic here that I'm going to send you to. It's called BayPAC. And she sent me there, and I was so happy because it was a really amazing experience, and everyone was really supportive of us.
So when you came to BayPAC, explain a little bit how and when PrEP was offered to you. And you, so you came and you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was already pregnant, and one of the first visits that I had with Deb Cohen, she offered me PrEP, and I asked some questions like, what are the chances of me becoming infected? Because my husband had been undetectable for like 2 years, I think, at that point. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, it's next to zero, it's very low, but there's still a chance. So there's this thing you can take, it's called PrEP, and she explained what it was and did I want to take it. And I was like, well, what's the risk to the baby? Like, have there been any studies about women taking it when they're pregnant? What are the risks to my baby? And she said, well, there's not really that many studies out about it. There's a possibility that your baby can have a slightly smaller head circumference. And so I thought, since the risk is very low anyway, I decided not to take it.
Mm-hmm. And then with BayPAC, were you offered PrEP again, or how did you continue throughout pregnancy and breastfeeding to weigh for yourself what the risks and benefits were?
I think I was offered PrEP a few more times, but I continued to decline it for that reason because I didn't know what the risks were going to be to the baby, and I felt that the risk was so low for myself and for her. With Dion being undetectable for that long anyway, that I continue to decline PrEP. But the care that we were receiving was so frequent and great that I was not really that concerned about it. Because when I would go in for my prenatal appointments and then after the baby was born for my, well baby checkups, then we did it as a family. Like, my husband had the same provider as me, and we would have our appointments together, and he would get his viral load done once a month, and I would get an HIV test once a month just in case I somehow caught it from him while I was pregnant or breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
So we were under very watchful care.
So, and you guys were seen as a couple.
We were seen as a couple.
Mm-hmm. Can you share an experience in which you felt really supported in having made this decision?
The whole time that I was at BayPAC, I felt really supported. I really loved all of my providers and my social worker, Becca. She's great, too. There wasn't a time that I didn't feel supported.
Like, I mean, maybe also outside of the BayPAC experience, in terms of, like, sharing the story in the world, after being on the front page of the Chronicle and now going to town halls and sharing your story, is there an experience in which you felt totally supported, and is there any time in which the decision you've made has felt hard?
I think that, like, the day after the Chronicle article came out, it was right after I had Valerie as my baby, and we went to Best Buy, and there was a guy there, and he was like, oh, you're that couple, you had your baby, I saw you on the front page of the Chronicle, you're such an inspiration. So that was really great.
That's so beautiful.
And it's, it was awesome. And people have, like, approached me on the bus before, too, and recognized me from then. But it happened less frequently since it was a while ago. But, and the time when it was hard, probably, I posted the Washington Post article on Facebook, and I quoted in it, and I just wanted to share it. And my friend's mom was saying, oh, I don't believe that people who have HIV should have babies. It's too risky. It's selfish. They're terrible people, blah, blah, blah. And so I was, like, arguing with her, like, in a nice way, and I sent her all of this information, and she sent me a message, and she was like, you know what, I feel like I was wrong. I'm sorry for saying that. So I guess that was hard, but then I transferred her over to our side. I converted her.
Even though you have opted to not use PrEP, you've become a strong advocate for PrEP access for women, including trans women. Why is this?
Well, just because PrEP, I didn't feel that PrEP was for me, that doesn't mean that it can't be for somebody else. I think it's a great tool, and a lot of women are at risk, and they can prevent themselves from getting HIV by taking this pill, and especially for trans women, because I've had a lot of trans women friends who, all of my trans women friends actually are HIV positive. And I know that they're at much higher risk, so I'd like to see PrEP be implemented in the trans community a lot more than it is.
Mm-hmm. Which is so fantastic. What's next for you?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So I'm working on a video project, which is a collaboration between BAPAC and the Center of Excellence for Transgender Health, and it's going to be about risk perception and prevention of HIV for all women, obviously including trans women. And we're doing a Twitter chat to that effect on October 7th at noon, if anyone wants to join us, with the hashtag #WeAreAllWomen, and it's going to be about what we all have in common as women. It's going to be a series of Twitter chats. It's going to include domestic violence, HIV prevention, body image, different stuff like that.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Caroline. And I'm now going to turn this over to Erica.
So, Erica, as Erica has lined up, I know that her slides are there.
I can advance her slides for her if she gives.
Sure, and I just wanted to chime in that there are lots of questions and comments coming in, and as I mentioned earlier, that we will be addressing your pre-submitted questions, especially those that are immediately addressing the questions around pregnancy and reproductive health and PrEP for women. Are you on with us now, Erica?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now?
Great. We can hear you now. Go right ahead.
Great. I was just talking into my muted line.
So, I do the same thing.
Carolyn, I wanted to thank you so much for sharing that information with us. That's really helpful to us to hear your experience. And Shannon, it was a wonderful exhilarating overview of what's going on with PrEP, but really what's exciting is how many people are on this call. Just shows us how much interest there is in PrEP for women. It's just remarkable how exciting that this tool, this choice that we can use, is has been taken up by those of us who are most interested in it, and I think we now need to really get this integrated into medical practice much more than it is, and I'll talk about that. I'm just going to be giving a review of recent studies over the last year and then talk about what the guidelines, what the CDC guidelines have presented us with. They're fabulous guidelines. There's great stuff on their site that you can access. Shannon had it on a previous slide, the access to the CDC guidelines. I'm going to specifically focus in what's in the guidelines on for preconception or periconception care. So one thing that's interesting is that we there was a study that looked at prescribers for who was prescribing PrEP in the United States between January 2011 and 2013. And the pharmacy data was gotten from approximately 55% of U.S. pharmacies. And the prescribers were general practitioners, internal medicine practitioners, and one out of 10 scripts were by NPs or PAs. There was a total of 1,774 subjects that were identified as starting Truvada for PrEP purposes, and of them, almost 50% were women. And I think that's very interesting that that many women have been accessing PrEP, have been asking their providers for PrEP before there has even been a marketing or a real outreach to the public about this choice that we now have. There was also a study recently done that looked at the risk of HIV transmission per sexual act, and I think this is important to look at all the risk factors and all the choices that we have for preventing HIV transmission and kind of put it in the mix together and then decide where does PrEP fall into this. So I'm going to talk about this study because I think it's important to know how low the risk is of HIV transmission if an HIV-infected person is part of the couple and that that person has been on antiretrovirals for more than 6 months, whether or not they were virally suppressed. So in this study, they didn't look at the viral load. They just looked at how long the person was on ART, and the person was in comprehensive care. And of those people that meet those three, that met that three criteria, the per act of risk of transmission was less than 13 per 100,000. So while the risk is not zero, and we cannot say that if your partner who has HIV is on ART, that you have no risk of transmission, the risk is very, very low. And I think that's important when we think about how what our risks are and what choices we want to lower our risk of HIV. There was also a poster presented at CROI in 2013. Actually, I think it was in 2014, I'm sorry, that looked at, it was a modeling approach for looking at the benefits of PrEP during attempted conception. And the primary outcome of interest was an HIV uninfected woman remaining negative and successfully conceiving and delivering while on PrEP. And based on the modeling approach that these researchers used, they found that PrEP actually added little benefit when all the following were true: that an HIV-infected male partner was on antiretroviral treatment, that unprotected intercourse was limited to a period of ovulation only, and that all STIs were diagnosed and treated in both partners. There was no difference between these four strategies, PrEP being the fourth one. And, however, what drove the difference between all the strategies when they were put into a modeling, the model, was that the HIV male partner was on ART. So, again, we do know that the use of ART by the partner and preferably an undetectable viral load really is the most effective in preventing transmission. However, and there was another study, I believe Shannon mentioned this, so I won't go into too much detail about it, but it was a trial looking at pregnancy incidents and outcomes among women who were actually receiving PrEP between July 2008 and June 2013. It took place in Kenya and Uganda. And the women were on either daily tenofovir, Truvada, or a placebo. And the differences in pregnancy incidence, birth outcomes, and infant growth were not statistically significantly different for women who received PrEP as compared to people or the women who were on placebo at conception. But one thing to keep in mind is that in most of the studies that have been done, the large studies looking at the efficacy of PrEP, PrEP was discontinued when pregnancy was detected in the large studies. And so we really need more information about PrEP during pregnancy than we have at this point. But although we do need more studies to determine the absolute safety of taking PrEP while attempting pregnancy and during the prenatal period, a foundation is being built pointing in the direction of safety of PrEP, and I'll talk a little more about this as well. But we know that not all persons who are HIV positive are ready to start ART, antiretroviral. So that in the Partners PrEP study, which was one of the large studies that was looking at the efficacy of PrEP, 772 discordant couples were asked, would you be willing to start antiretroviral if it would lower your chance of giving HIV to your partner? So the HIV positive persons in the serodiscordant couples were asked this. And of the men in this trial, 58% said yes, but 42% said no. And of the women, 30% said no. So even in this study population of people who had incredible counseling on safe sex practices and the importance of taking ART to lower the risk of transmission to their partner, there's still a very high percentage of persons who, outside of the study, would have decided not to use antiretrovirals. So the HIV-negative partner cannot always depend on the fact that their partner is on ART with an undetectable viral load and no resistance. And this just points out that for a woman to rely on her male partner to protect her from acquiring HIV disempowers women, it undermines her efforts to control her own risk, and it at times may put her at risk of violence. So PrEP is a choice, and it's a tool that women can use to protect her own destiny, to have control over her risk of acquiring HIV without depending on her partner's behavior. It is a reproductive justice issue. So just to review how PrEP works when it's taken. So there were the major studies that were done, there were four that were quite successful and two that were not. The four that were successful, what was reported was how, in a randomized comparison, the efficacy of PrEP, how PrEP protected people and all the people who were in the study. And then, later on, the authors of these studies looked at the drug levels and then looked at what the efficacy, how much protection the people had. So in the Partners PrEP trial, which is this first trial here, this was a placebo-controlled trial taking daily Truvada or tenofovir in 47,000 discordant heterosexual couples in Uganda and Kenya. And 75% efficacy was shown when people were asked if they took their, of all the people in the study who said they took the Truvada. And for women, it was 66% efficacy. But when we looked at the drug levels in the same people, we found that those who had detected drug levels in their blood, there was 90% protection. And that's really the important number here is that taking the medication did provide an amazing amount of protection against HIV. And we see the same thing in the other major studies, the TDF2 study, which was done in Botswana on heterosexual men and women, where 85% of those who had drug detected in their blood were protected against HIV. The IPREC study, which looked at men who had sex with men and transgendered, 1.2% of which were transgendered, 92% had protection when the drug was detected in the blood. And then the Thai study, which looked at IV drug users, had a 73% protection. The FemPrep and the VOICE trial both had no HIV protection. And in both of these trials, there was less than 30% of the participants, and these were women, took the medication. So, yet again, we do know that if you take the medication, it is effective. And we know that PrEP is safe as well. There have been the rates of death or adverse events, laboratory abnormalities were very, very low, not significant between those receiving PrEP and those receiving the placebo. It was very well tolerated as well. And there was a very small percent change in bone mineral density, but no increased risk of fracture. So there was no increased fracture seen in this population who were on PrEP, and that would be the effect of the Travail. Also, the resistance of those people who did, so if you take Truvada and you become HIV infected, you can become resistant to the medication. And in all these studies, the majority of people who actually had resistance to the medicine were people who were already diagnosed at the time, at the beginning of the study, wasn't recognized, and they started the medication. There was very, very few transmission risks. Very few resistance in people who were on the medication and took them adherently. So now to just jump to the U.S. Public Health Service, the CDC did come up with the protocols for PrEP. It's an excellent, excellent protocol, and there's very good information in this guideline. And I encourage you to go online and look at this. Go to the cdc.gov website, and you can find it from there. And it's very, very clear how they suggest taking PrEP and suggesting how providers can provide PrEP to their clients. But I want to focus on the women, heterosexual women at this point. I'm trying to get my pointer. There it is. So I wanted to just focus on this section for this part, this talk. So detecting a substantial risk of acquiring HIV infection, in this population of heterosexual women and men, the HIV-positive sexual, there would be a HIV-positive sexual partner. There would be a recent bacterial sexually transmitted infection of the person who would be a person who could take PrEP. There would be a high number of sex partners. There would be a history of inconsistent or no condom use. There would be commercial sex work and a high prevalence area or network. So that's how they identify high-risk persons. And there is a whole section on preconception during pregnancy and breastfeeding in the guidelines. And just to give a little background, there was a study that looked at women without HIV who had sex partners with HIV during conception attempts and pregnancy was associated with an increased risk of HIV acquisition. This was in 2011. So just pregnancy, being pregnant by itself can increase the risk of HIV acquisition in the partner. So it's a very important time to use protection. PrEP offers an additional tool to reduce the risk of transmission during periconception, pregnancy, and during breastfeeding. And the FDA labeling has allowed the use of PrEP in pregnancy and to prevent prevent HIV transmission during breastfeeding. PrEP trials with women without medication, with women on medication was discontinued, as I had said before, for those women who became pregnant. So there's not a lot of safety for exposed fetuses that were assessed during these trials. But there was a small study of periconception use of tenofovir in 46 uninfected women, and there was no ill effects found in pregnancy, and that was by Fernanza. And this was published in AIDS in 2011. So in the guidelines, what is discussed is that during conception attempts, pregnancy, and breastfeeding, the HIV-positive partner should be on ART with an undetectable viral load. And I think it's very important to point out that during breastfeeding is a very high risk of transmission of HIV to the baby if the woman's urine converts. And so at the time in the postpartum period, we should not forget about continuing ART with the HIV-positive person and having remaining undetectable. But but also using PrEP at that time. It's a very important period of time. We know that infants who were exposed to PrEP during lactation has not been well studied, but data from infants who've been exposed to Truvada through breast milk suggests very limited drug exposure. The Pregnancy Registry, which is a national registry where anyone who is caring for a woman who is HIV positive and on antiretroviral, or anyone who has a woman on PrEP during pregnancy, reports that information to a national registry, and that registry then collects all the information and reports if there's any teratogenicity in the infant. And the Pregnancy Registry provides no evidence of adverse effects among infants exposed to the medications that are in PrEP. There also has been no differences in the rates of birth defects in the first trimester, which is very encouraging with using this medication. And here's several studies that you can refer to if you wanted to on this subject, on this topic. And there's several other studies that look at the use of tenofovir for treatment during pregnancy, and again, there have been no association of adverse outcomes, no association of preterm birth, no teratogenicity, and that was reported by Saibari, and also And the other thing that's important, that I felt was important in the guidelines, the PrEP guidelines, was there was a discussion about HIV negative man planning pregnancy with an HIV positive female. And again, that the positive female should be on ART with an undetectable viral load. STI should be diagnosed and treated. oral doses of tenofovir should be given 1 month before conception attempt, continue for 1 month after, intravaginal insemination, and that other ways, there's other ways that you can become pregnant by intravaginal insemination with the male sperm inseminated, doing self-insemination at home with fresh semen sample, or limit sex without a condom to peak fertility times that you can identify by using an ovulation kit. So these are other methods that you can use on top of PrEP to prevent HIV from transmitting to the HIV-negative man. So the next way that the guidelines are helpful is trying to find out who's clinically eligible. And so we want to make sure that no one starts antiretrovirals or PrEP if there's any signs of acute HIV infection, because we want to make sure that the person is HIV negative prior to starting PrEP. And we also want to do baseline assessments, making sure that there is a negative status, that there's a baseline normal renal function, and that the person is not does not have chronic hepatitis C. And if they do have hepatitis, chronic hepatitis B, they can actually be started on PrEP, but it needs to be assured that when the PrEP is finished that their liver is watched very carefully to make sure that there's no increased liver enzymes after PrEP is finished, and that STD screening needs to occur. And then the prescription, the next step is just prescribing. And the prescription, there has been studies that have looked at using tenofovir alone, but there's not enough information out yet about just using tenofovir by itself. So we do recommend using tenofovir and M-trifiptabine, which is also FTC, and together that is what Truvada is. And there's lots of information, patient information, in the guidelines on that you can download and read what is, you know, telling you what is PrEP, what is Truvada, what are some of the side effects of Truvada, and then there's provider information sheets about how to prescribe Truvada. So the next thing that is identified in the guidelines is just how to talk about medication adherence and counseling, how to be sure to, you know, look ahead and think about what are the issues that may stop you from taking medications every day, and having very good, frank discussions with your provider and with the provider, with the client, about how do we remember to take medications. And so there's lots of good information in these guidelines on that. And also the same as lowering your risk of your risk of getting HIV, getting STDs, getting pregnant, and how to do that in a non-judgmental manner by providers that supports risk reduction efforts. And there's a lot of information in the in these guidelines, the PrEP guidelines, that are very helpful, I found. So PrEP should be part of an integrated harm reduction strategy. People may want to use PrEP, but there are also other strategies that we can use to prevent HIV transmission. And clinicians should regularly discuss with their clients their risk of pregnancy, their risk of STDs, the risk of HIV transmission, and of abuse. Persons with HIV should be asked consistently about their partner's risk, and persons who do not have HIV should be asked about their partner's risk and their partner's status as well. And this should be part of routine care. So if you're a provider and you want to know how to bill for PrEP, this would be two billing codes that you could use to collect payment for your visit. And if you are a person who's uninsured, you can get free drugs from the Gilead by going to Truvada.com, and there's a drug assistance form that needs to be filled out and sent back to Gilead, I found that the medication comes very quickly, and people, you can get as much as 6 months supply and then reapply again for assistance and get another 6 months supply. So it is available if for people who are uninsured. If you are insured, your health insurance should pay for it. I haven't seen any problems with health insurance not paying for it at this point. So the assumption is that all health insurance, private and public health insurance, will pay at this point for Truvada. Truvada and also Gilead provides free HIV and hepatitis B viral testing. And if a patient does become positive on Truvada, there's free resistance testing for people who don't have access to insurance. This is the patient assistance program form, and it's really not very hard to fill out at all. So I just want to end with a statement that if we are to implement PrEP as part of routine care and have it accessible to all, we need to have more of an education campaign in the United States and worldwide that increases the awareness to persons who might benefit from PrEP. We need to have an education campaign to train providers who are interested in offering PrEP to their patients. There needs to be systematic training in medical clinics, family planning clinics, HIV, and OBGYN clinics. We need to monitor PrEP use and its health impact. We need to disperse information on models of implementation, disperse information on clinical research, ensure that insurance policies will, in fact, continue to reimburse the billing codes and the medications, and we make sure that coverage for uninsured needs to be worked out with lab costs and coverage for the visit so that there's not a barrier to care. These are some wonderful patient information sites that I highly recommend you go to. There's great information on all of these sites. And then the last slide is just the perinatal hotline, the warm line, and the PEP line, which is a great resource if you have any questions at all to call this number, and you get someone on the phone immediately to help you with any questions. So thank you very much for your interest in this.
Thank you so very much, Erica and Caroline and Shannon. Those were all really fantastic presentations and conversations, and I myself have learned new things today, and I hope that others on the line have learned as well. I want to first go to our pre-submitted questions. There are a couple that were specific to the notion or to the question around the use of PrEP and conception. If you sent in a pre-submitted question with your registration and it was not specifically about conception, there are many different resources that can be available to you, including some of those places that Erica and Shannon have mentioned already. I highly recommend that folks visit the AVAC.org website, and you can also visit PrepWatch.org for this particular webinar. There will be a posting of today's audio and presentations available probably after tomorrow at prepwatch.org/USwomen/#webinars. And, of course, there are other opportunities for webinars coming in the near future for us to continue these conversations. So I have just a couple of things. One that came in immediately on the chat line, and this might be a question for Shannon, and it's just very specific, and that is if you're aware of how the Texas PrEP Clinic was funded. I'm going to also lay out a couple of more questions, and then our presenters can just answer the both of them for the next 5 minutes or so, and then we're going to, or less, and then we're going to open up the line. And Vonda, if you'll help us with that after these next questions, that would be great. So one of the questions that has come in is, what, in addition to the question about the funding of the Texas PrEP Clinic, what is the consensus recommendation for the time frame for HIV uninfected women coming off of PrEP once conception has been achieved? Someone can take that one. And then my last one for right now is, please recommend, and it's similar to that question, but please address if you recommend that women stay on PrEP post-conception if their intent is to return to protected intercourse. And I'm imagining that that question is coming, especially if it's in line with an HIV-negative woman with an HIV-positive partner. So if Erica, Shannon, Caroline, if you want to take those three questions, please do.
This is Shannon. I'll say about the Texas clinic that I don't know the specific answer, so I don't want to answer on their behalf. Maybe if someone from Texas is in the chat, they can chime up. But it's my understanding that it's being implemented as part of clinical care. So it's being paid for as part of regular clinical care, preventative care. And I will also leave the specific timing question to Erica about the when someone stops PrEP, but I want to address the question about does a woman continue PrEP during pregnancy. And I just want to relate our BAPAC experience, which is that women opt to use PrEP for different periods of time that work for them, and sometimes a woman's story when she starts with us and when she gets pregnant is different. So it's really important to have these range of options and an ongoing conversation, a dialogue that's happening, so that a woman can access the prevention method that works best for her. And as we saw from Caroline's story, the option that Caroline chose was using treatment as prevention and having a couples-based approach to their health care. And so while a woman might come to us and opt to use PrEP for conception and was using condoms, doesn't mean that she continues to do that, or her concern about her risk during pregnancy for whatever reason might increase and she might choose to continue to take PrEP. My point being, it's not a one-time conversation. It's an ongoing conversation that we have.
Yeah, I would agree with what Shannon said. If someone wants to stop PrEP once they get pregnant, they can stop right away. Once they, once their pregnancy test is positive, they don't need to stay on that as long as they have a plan for protecting themselves during pregnancy. So if their partner has an undetectable viral load, if they consistently use condoms, they don't need to have to use PrEP on top of that. But many women still decide to continue PrEP, based on many of the things I said in my talk. So it, as Shannon said, it's really an individual decision.
Mm-hmm. And I have one more question for you all, and then one that came in that I would like to just quickly address, and then I want to turn it over to Manju. Well, I want to actually open up the lines first before we go to the chat box questions or comments that came in. But Erica or Shannon or Caroline, does PrEP in any way interfere with the efficacy of birth control and pregnancy prevention?
Not that we know of at this point. So there was only one small study that I've seen that actually looked at this, and there was not, an effect was not seen, but it was very small. I think it's still new. But we do know that the medication that is in Truvada is not known to interfere with hormonal contraception. It's more the protease inhibitors that have an effect on the contraception. So I'm
right.
not anticipating that there would be any effect.
And as a matter of fact, it's not just hormonal contraception, but any of the female or women-oriented hormones, from what I understand, there's no indication that there's an interference from PrEP. So that's also, I think, a question of concern, particularly for transgender women as well. One of the other questions, thank you, Erica and Shannon and Caroline again. One of the other questions that came in that I think I can address fairly quickly is about how do we use PrEP as an issue of reproductive justice? And I think that that's, of course, a much longer conversation, but in terms of our call today, one of the key points of advocacy for those of us who have been in this for a long time, including some of us who've been in the microbicide advocacy work for about 25 years, that the whole question of whether or not women are able to autonomously prevent HIV transmission in themselves has always been in the forefront of looking at it from a reproductive justice standpoint. And so from the standpoint of saying that PrEP may, in fact, become the very first and right now only tool that can put the power of prevention in women's hands, where we don't have to negotiate with anyone other than our providers, as has been so eloquently shared by both Caroline and Shannon, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's an easy trek to do that, but that PrEP itself as a tool is one of the first prevention methods that we have that's totally in our control outside abstinence, but I don't live in the world of abstinence. So that's one answer I would have, but it is also an issue of reproductive justice simply because we are also wanting to make sure that we keep women's concerns, women's risk, and women's access to PrEP and the availability of PrEP to women as an issue of reproductive justice. So in terms of our advocacy for women to continue to grow in their ability to use PrEP autonomously and in a way that they can self-determine their own pregnancy outcomes as well as their HIV risk, then it is an ongoing issue for reproductive justice. So, Vonda, if you're there, I would like to, we are right now 10 minutes out from the end of the call. If there are burning clarifying questions, Vonda, could you please inform us how folks may engage?
Faisal, this is Shannon. I want to say quickly that we didn't mention this time. It came up in our webinar last year, but being pregnant increases a woman's risk of acquiring HIV. Mm-hmm. And if a woman's, Erica mentioned this during her presentation, but I want to just point out again that if a woman seroconverts during pregnancy or breastfeeding, there's an increased risk to her infant. And so for me, this relates to, it's a kind of a follow-up from that question about contraception, which is a good question in and of itself, but in terms of how we frame the woman's experience and helping her to weigh the risks and benefits, which those are going to be very individual and vary at that point in time. It's
excellent. Very good, Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And as a matter of fact, there are other questions that are coming and that will be coming in unanswered. And if it's okay, we can commit to providing, as well as the follow-up, access to this webinar and the audio, is as the last time we prepared some FAQs in relation to some of the questions and answers that we did not get to. So I think we can do that again this time. Vonda, can you give us some instructions?
Thank you. At this time, if you have a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
I would take this radio silence moment to also inform people that upcoming, I had this open. I want to share with you if you happen to be in the D.C. area, in Washington, D.C., upcoming forum on PrEP for HIV prevention. It's being sponsored by Whitman Walker Health and the Milken Institute School of Public Health at George Washington University. It will be on September 29th at 6:30 p.m., and it will be held at the Milken Institute School of Public Health in Washington, D.C. So I just wanted to throw that in there while we're waiting for the queue to line up. Vonda?
And there are no audio questions at this time.
All right, then I would like to turn it over to Manju. Manju, if there were any online chat questions that came in during the call, would you like to share some of those with us?
Based on, actually, I see a couple of people whose hands are raised. There's a Rakesha Grove, and I wonder if Rakesha wanted to ask her question on the phone. All right. Otherwise, one of the questions that has recently come in is from John Williams. If either Erica or Shannon want to take this, and it's, what is it about pregnancy that increases the risk for HIV infection?
I'm sorry, can you just repeat that question?
Sure. What is it about pregnancy that increases the risk for HIV infection?
I don't know that I know the answer to that. I'm not sure that the researchers know either. It's possibly because of increased ectopy of the cervix that could, you know, that there could be more of an increased risk of transmission, but I'm not sure if there's also a hormonal impact as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know the answer. I'm sorry.
And I agree with Erica that we don't have a clear answer about it, the why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's another question here that's come in from Georgette King, and she's asking if there are any studies or implementation programs that are looking at using simple repackaging plans as a way of increasing adherence rates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are certain pharmacies that package individual, you know, we have individual pill packets. And that is their way of giving medications out. I would assume they would do the same thing if you asked those companies to do that with Truvada. There's a couple that we use that package it, and it makes it just very easy for people to take all their medications for the day. So Truvada could be part of that. There's no reason that it couldn't be part of that.
So the other part of that question that came in from Georgette also asks if there are any studies or implementation programs that are using those simple repackaging plans as a way of increasing adherence rates. And I just wanted to chime in that there currently, and this is also another issue when we ask about PrEP as an issue of reproductive justice and or making sure for women's inclusion at the very least, is that currently there is only one implementation study that's ongoing in the U.S. that's just begun this year in 2014, and they actually have just begun the rollout and the enrollment. So there are plenty of questions that we should be able to answer as that study continues in four cities across the United States, and that is actually being sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control through the CDC Foundation. There are some very practical questions that have also come in around the health insurance and the coverage, and I want to agree with my brother Jim Pickett, who wrote in to remind us that while health insurance is covering Truvada, that it's not necessarily as simple as it seems, simply because of the way that the new Affordable Care Act is being implemented, that health insurance copays as well as premiums and deductibles may actually make that a little prohibitive just in terms of the cost and the ability to pay for those additional fees that now come along with accessing health care through the exchanges and or through the new Medicaid programs. So I Monty, do you have other questions that you wanted to address?
No, there are others, but I was going to ask Vonda if there are any, anyone who wants to ask questions on the phone before I hand over to you, since I recognize we have a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please. Your first question comes from the line of Rakesha.
Hi, I'm wondering, I recently had a client turn out positive, and at that time his girlfriend was with him, and so she started PEP. At that time she thought she was pregnant, but we found out that she wasn't. Recently he went to the doctor, I would say probably this past Friday, and started a tripla, but over the weekend he sent a text message and informed me that the girlfriend is now pregnant. So my question is, she just finished up a series of PEP. Now should we be looking to put her on to PrEP?
Yeah, there's no reason that she couldn't be on PrEP now, especially if he just started on atripla. His viral load probably is not undetectable yet, so this would be a good time to put her on PrEP. Also to, you know, encourage consistent condom use at all times. So between the condom use and the PrEP until his viral load is undetectable, and then they can make decisions after that if they want to continue all three things.
Okay.
Great job with that couple, by the way. I mean, it really speaks to your relationship with them that they are talking with you in this way and following up with you. It's really beautiful. I'm also happy to help connect you with local resources, because depending on their story and what happens for him being in care and you know, whatever decisions they make, we want to make sure she has access to ongoing testing and that she gets her own information and making her own decisions. So feel free to reach out to me if you want some help with that.
Okay.
Great. Well, we are right at 1 minute out from the bottom of our 90 minutes. And first and foremost, I really, really want to thank our partners in PrEP who have joined us as speakers on this call today, including Erica Aaron, Caroline Watson, and Shannon Weber. We can send out a webinar applause to the three of you for sharing really critical, up-to-date information about the role that PrEP plays in conception, especially for women for if any spectrum see themselves at risk for HIV and are interested in pregnancy. So thank you all so much for taking your time to share your experiences as well as your information with us. Again, there are more resources available to you if you have questions that weren't answered today. Hopefully they can be online. In addition to the prepwatch.org/USwomen/#webinars, if you go to that website, there are previous webinars that have been held, including our last webinar that happened earlier in the summer, at which we talked about the massive amount of resources that are actually available around PrEP for answers to some of your questions, as well as resources that may be local to you, materials that you may need to use in your own work or in your own communities or even in your own families. So I highly recommend that you also look at some of the past webinars and take a listen to those conversations. Stay tuned, because we look forward to having you all join us when we drill a little bit deeper into the notions of risk with our upcoming webinar, date to be determined, but it will be in November, on Risky Women Disrupting Simple Notions of Women's HIV Risk. Thank you again to all of you for joining in with us today. Thank you again to our partners, AVAC, The Well Project, HIV Prevention Justice Alliance, the Bay Area Perinatal AIDS Center, and the Clinical Consultation Center, as well as, and in all transparency, one of our, this webinar, of course, is partially funded in partnership with Gilead. So we want to thank everybody for joining us today. Stay tuned and look for more in the future. Prep me, please. I'm so thankful that we are getting further down the road in understanding PrEP's role in women's health and safer conception. Thanks to you all, and have a great day.